from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Rachel Miro in for Dave Iverson. Five San Francisco police officers are due in federal court today to face multiple charges of theft, drug dealing, and violating suspects' civil rights. A sixth individual, a former cop, has already pleaded guilty. The criminal indictments unsealed this week are just the latest developments in one of the San Francisco Police Department's largest misconduct investigations in years. Already, more than 100 related criminal cases have been dropped by prosecutors because of suspected police misconduct. What more surprises lie in store? And later in this hour, we'll talk about Treasure Island and new questions about what the Navy knew when about the radioactive waste there. That's after this on Forum. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Rachel Miro in today for Dave Iverson. Federal authorities insist their prosecution of five current SFPD officers and one former officer should not be seen as an indicative of systemic corruption within the San Francisco Police Department, but the charges are dramatic and wide-ranging just the same. Theft, extortion, drug dealing, and civil rights violations. The charges stem from surveillance footage from a hotel in the Tenderloin released by the city's public defender, Jeff Adachi, a few years ago. And he's here in studio to talk about it a few years later. Jeff Adachi, thank you for joining us.
It's great to be here. Thanks, Rachel.
We also have Jim Hammer, former San Francisco prosecutor and former San Francisco police commissioner. Thank you for being here.
Great to be with you.
Well, Jeff Adachi, let's start with you. We should mention the San Francisco Police Department was contacted, but they haven't responded to us in time for this show. Can you tell us, for the benefit of people who are unfamiliar with this case, what's alleged to have happened?
Well, what had happened in 2010, we had been aware at one particular residential hotel known as the Henry Hotel. It's a hotel in the Soma area on 6th Street. If you're coming to San Francisco, it's probably not the best place to stay. There are, you know, a lot of issues at that particular hotel. But, you know, we represent individuals who can't afford a lawyer. And so there were drug arrests that were being made at that hotel. And many of the clients told us that the officers were barging into the rooms without warrants. They were forcing the clerks to give them pass keys to go into people's rooms, and they were making illegal arrests. And, of course, our job as public defenders is to raise these objections in court, which we would. But the justice system turned a blind eye. You know, the judges and prosecutors pretty much ignored it. And anyone will tell you, one thing about the criminal justice system is that the police are usually believed by judges over a person accused of a crime. And so we sent an investigator in our office to the hotel, and it turned out that they had a pretty good surveillance system there. And so we were able to download a year and a half of video, and we took the police reports, and these are reports filled out by officers reporting incidents that are written and signed under penalty of perjury. And we compared it to what was on the videotape. And in every case, it showed the officers were lying about, you know, how they gained entrance into the room. They'd say in the police report, oh, we knocked on the door and asked Ms. So-and-so if we can come in. And she said, sure. And you watch the video, and it has them barging into the room. In one instance, you could even see one of the police officers put his hand over the video camera. And then he takes it away just as they're barging into somebody's room without a warrant. And we even began investigating other residential hotels, getting, again, video surveillance, and found that officers were taking items from the rooms which were not documented in any way in the police report. So they were stealing. And so, you know, this was the impetus for this investigation. And we publicized the videos. We, of all things, put them on YouTube. We had, I think, 5,000 hits within a couple of days, and it was on CNN by the weekend. So, you know, by exposing this, it came to light. And then the FBI and the U.S. attorney began an investigation resulting in these indictments.
Just a few years later. Is that a fair assessment, a fair summation, would you say, Jim Hammer?
I think largely it is. I would say, though, at the end of the day, first of all, this is one of the most shocking things I've heard of. I agree with Chief Sir, whom I helped pick when I was on the San Francisco Police Commission as the new police chief, that it's one of the most shocking things that could happen period. It's absolutely outrageous. Having said that, the system worked. Jeff Adachi did his job of exposing this. In fact, the SF Police Department itself put officers on this task force that worked with the FBI to uncover this. And having sat on the San Francisco Police Commission, where we did police discipline, I myself voted to fire police officers. So there are systems in place. I don't think it's an endemic problem to the entire department, but it just shocks the conscience what happened.
What's your assessment of how the police department has responded to these charges? Have they truly cooperated with federal authorities?
I think absolutely. And I think you heard it from the quote from the federal authorities. If they thought it was a bigger problem, they would have kept going. I think beyond that, and I think what people should know is I think there have been systemic changes within the police department. I think Chief Greg Suhr has instituted some of those, came up during the interview when we were interviewing police chief candidates, this kind of issue. I mean, one of the simplest ways to address this, and I think Jeff would agree, is to put cameras on the lapels of police officers. Police officers are public servants. Their entire work and the work of prosecutors depends upon their honesty. I think Greg Suhr, the new chief, has instituted this pilot program of putting cameras. I advocated that a couple of years ago. I think every cop out there to have it, it'll be turned on during a search or anything sensitive or an interview, then the public would know exactly what's going on. So that's the kind of thing I think. Secondly, to rotate officers in and out of narcotics. I think if you work undercover, and I've worked with police officers who work undercover, the danger of going astray when you work in the shadows 10 hours a day goes up. So I think rotating people in and out of those units is another good proactive fix, and I think that's going on now.
Do those sound like fixes you'd approve of, Jeff Adachi?
Yeah. In fact, you know, cameras on police officers I think is a good idea. It has to be used consistently. I understand that currently only some police officers are going to be, you know, armed with the body cameras. I would take issue with one thing that Jim said, the system worked. You know, if you were accused of a crime and in many instances people went to prison because of these police officers lying on the witness stand and saying things that weren't true. We even had a videotape that proved that a person who was innocent walked into the hotel room and the officers claimed that he was wearing a jacket that wasn't his. And you can clearly see on the video it's not his jacket. And he was in prison for 6 months. So there is a harm. And, you know, people can say, well, you know, these are folks suspected of, you know, being involved in drugs or you know, living in this poor area of town. But, you know, the poor people have a right to not to be subject to civil rights violations and constitutional
or
violations.
False arrest.
Right, false arrest. And, you know, that's what was happening here, that you had officers who were routinely and systematically lying. And what we showed is that it wasn't just confined to this group of officers. There are other officers who are engaging in the same thing. And, you know, what was shocking to me is that judges and prosecutors turned a blind eye to this until there was video evidence. And even with video evidence, I think that the chief, you know, originally said when this was, you know, discovered that, you know, he did not believe that there was misconduct that had occurred. You know, he has since worked with myself and others, you know, to implement a policy that prevents officers from using passkeys and doing things similar to what got these officers in trouble. One thing I'd mention, though, is that if you look at the indictments, there is actually even more information. And again, it's not clear because we don't have the reports that support it, but it appears that the officers from Mission Station, because there's two groups, Mission Station and Southern Station, were also involved in, it sounds like they were stealing evidence. And they have a money value of over $5,000, so it was substantial. Also, appears that they're accused of distributing marijuana. So I don't know where they were getting the marijuana from, whether they were seizing it from suspects or from the evidence room. It's not exactly clear. But this goes beyond even what we discovered.
We want to get to that in just a moment. But first, I want to give out our phone number, 866-733-6786. We're talking about rogue cops in the San Francisco Police Department. What's your experience? Have you witnessed bad behavior from officers in uniform? Again, call us at 866-733-6786. You can also email us at forum@kqed.org or head to our webpage online, kqed.org/forum, to add your questions there. Jeff Adachi, I want to raise something you've been talking about here a second time. Federal authorities say that this is not systemic, but it sounds like you're talking about something that is systemic.
Right. I mean, one thing, I've been working in the criminal justice system in San Francisco for 30 years, and I can tell you without question that there is a lot of perjury that happens every day in court. I had a good friend who was a police officer, and he told me, he says, you know, you're sitting there trying to enforce the Constitution. We're out there on the streets. You know, we have our own Constitution, and I'm going to go to court and, you know, say what I need to say in order to save my case. And, you know, is that endemic? I think the problem is that police officers are going to be believed by judges. You know, most judges are going to take the word of a police officer, you know, even over, you know, three or four people who are civilians. And so police officers know that. They also know that if they, you know, are, you know, caught lying or let's say the case gets thrown out, that's usually the only consequence there is. I mean, you know, Jim was on the police commission, and it wasn't until recently that officers were even held accountable, I mean, for, you know, pretty major incidents like, you know, physical violence against a member of the public, things like that. And so there isn't a lot of accountability, and that's one of the problems. And here, you know, do I think that, you know, this is representative of what all the San Francisco Police Department has done? No, not at all. Most of the police officers I know, they're hardworking and they try to do the right thing. But still, we have to ask, you know, this is something that occurred over a period of time, at least from 2009 till 2011. And we have to ask, you know, why was this allowed to continue? You know, these are groups of officers. When you file a police report, it has to be signed off by a superior. And, you know, these are incidents which are routinely reviewed. You have a management and control office within the police department whose job it is to oversee this, and the police commission oversee it. We have an office of citizens' complaints that's supposed to investigate police misconduct. So how is it that nobody realized that this was going on?
Well, let's put that question to Jim Hammer. Multiple different organizations, individuals supposedly responsible for making sure that it doesn't get to the point where federal investigators have to investigate.
A couple things. I think Jeff has overspoken, and I don't blame him for trying to do that, but I think it's unfair and inaccurate to say that there are lots of police officers who commit perjury. I think that's just false. I was a police officer. I've been a prosecutor most of my legal career. I myself caught cops lying in my office. I turned them in. They were fired and prosecuted. So if you brought in 10 prosecutors right here, their worst nightmare is to convict an innocent person. So that's important to keep in mind. Secondly, when people apply to be police officers, they don't apply because they want to go lie and cheat and steal from people. And by the way, if you're a police officer, you don't have to. There are crimes going on every day. So this idea that cops are routinely making stuff up, I just think is false. I will say this, that once five are publicly accused like this, it smears the entire department. And that's the gravest injury. And it will hurt good, hardworking officers. In terms of what broke down in this case, listen, Rachel, if you're intent on being dishonest and you're in a position of power or trust, whether you're in politics, whether you're in the state's Senate, whether you're a police officer, you can get away with it for a while if you're clever at it. I can tell you, again, I mentioned I was on a police commission up until a year and a half ago. Until I had been on that commission, no one had been fired for a while. At least during my time, a good number of officers were fired. And I will say that in the past, I think I agree with Jeff that the punishments handed down for two key issues, violence against citizens and dishonesty, were not strong enough. But during my time there, and I think now, I think cops know that if they lie, if they use violence against a citizen, there are severe consequences, including getting fired.
Let's go now to the phones. We've got Lauren in Sonoma.
Hi. I just have a brief comment. My wife, who's an attorney, a clerk for judges in San Francisco, and the judge was a good friend of hers, of ours, and he always told us that his biggest problem was deciding who was lying the most, the cops or the crooks.
That's a good question. Who wants to take that first? Jeff Adachi?
Yeah, well, you know, I wanted just to clarify, you know, one thing. You know, is the officer going to go on the witness stand and lie about something innocuous? No, probably not. But what we do find is that the truth gets stretched a lot and sometimes exaggerated. And I do believe that perjury in court is common when it comes to narcotic cases specifically because, they're, you know, the officers are called on to justify an illegal dope search. And so, you know, the comment, it's very interesting that it's something that you observed. But if you're in court every day, you do see that. You see the officers come in. You know, they've written a police report. They're there essentially to justify what they wrote in their report. And I've had a lot of instances where, you know, the police officer would say, oh, I was able to see this from here. And you go to the scene and look at it. You're like, wait a minute. You know, you can't see it. There's an obstruction. And I've, you know, seen that again and again and again. And, you know, do I think that these officers are there because, you know, they intentionally, you know, want to put an innocent person in prison? No. In their mind, they're doing their jobs. They're going to court. They're providing probable cause in order to justify an arrest that they think is justified. And so that's the problem, is that the ends do not justify the means. And we have to make sure that the police officers are playing by the rules, because if you have a police force that's essentially, you know, free to do whatever they want, yeah, sure, you're going to have a culture where there's an inattention to, you know, following the rules. And I think that's really what we need to make sure it happens in San Francisco going forward. I mean, I actually think that the fact that these indictments and what happened here is publicized is probably the best deterrent, because the officer's going to see that and say, you know what, it's not worth it. And I agree with Jim. We don't want to stain the vast majority of police officers who are trying to do their jobs and are honest. But, you know, again, when this happens, it really shakes the credibility of the entire criminal justice system. And I just want to mention two other things. So we had a situation in San Francisco where a prior to this, the discovery of these incidents, where it turned out that a chemist, a high-level chemist in the crime lab, was not only testing drugs but was using it and bringing it home. And that resulted in 1,000 cases being dismissed. And then we learned that she had a criminal conviction, which was never revealed to the defense as was required by law. And then we learned that 68 San Francisco police officers had misconduct records that had not been provided to the defense. So, you know, this is not an isolated incident in that regard.
Jim Hammer, this is sounding pretty systemic, at least, you know, if nothing else, from a standpoint of quality control.
Well, in terms of the last point Jeff made, there was a time before, I know I was on the police commission, where the police department did not have simply the correct system in place to hand over bad information on cops who were going to testify, and that was solved. And that was a problem. But again, Jeff just mentioned a chemist. Think about how many chemists have worked in that department over the last 10 years, and there's one who's corrupt. One is too many. But again, to try to paint a broad stroke with one example, I think is incorrect. The ends do not justify the means. Jeff and I are on exactly the same page. It is never okay for a cop to get on the stand and lie, because therefore he or she will justify their search. And if I brought in 10 officers right now, they wouldn't be as offended as your client who went to prison. That's the worst. That's the worst by far sin. But those 10 officers would be very, very furious that their own reputations had been put on the line, Jeff. And I'll tell you again, officers, 99% at least, enter for good reasons, because they want to help people, because they want to protect people. They want to stop rapes and catch rapists and murders. They don't go into lie, and most don't lie. And good prosecutors are part of the line of defense, Jeff, to shake those cases out themselves. They shouldn't wait for defense attorneys to do it. They ought to be looking critically at every case up to the moment of trial, even after trial. And I think that's what most prosecutors do.
And it is worth pointing out that this kind of thing where the feds have to swoop in doesn't happen a lot. Jeff Adachi, you've been in you know, this kind of work for, what, 30 years now?
I mean, this is the first time that the federal government has come in and stepped in on a case. And it is extraordinary for them to bring essentially a civil rights action in order to hold the police department accountable. You know, most times they're going to leave it to the, you know, local jurisdiction to deal with. But, you know, the fact that there's police corruption, particularly when it comes to drugs, is really endemic. The General Accounting Office concluded over a five-year period, the FBI opened at least 400 state and local police corruption cases that were drug-related, leading to the conviction of over 300 officers. And, you know, we can look at what happened in Tulia, Texas, where there were 43 residents who were wrongfully accused, the Rampart scandal. We had the right in L.A. We had the Ryder scandal in Oakland. So, you know, this is not an isolated incident. This is something which I think is endemic of the war on drugs. Remember that the war on drugs, it's a $15 billion a year industry, in the sense that that's what is spent on law enforcement. So there are grants, there's a lot of money out there, there are quotas that often have to be fulfilled. And all of this, I think, and plus the availability of money and greed and all those things that come with the drug trade is taking its toll also on law enforcement.
Let's get in another call. We've got Danica in Oakland. Hi, Danica.
All right. Hi.
Hi. Yes, what
Sorry,
was your...
I had you on speaker. yes, I actually I taught in Oakland over about a decade ago, and I would witness on a daily basis police officers in Oakland, East Oakland, like with prostitutes, drug dealers, and they were up to no good. And I'm not saying all officers are like that, but they need to be accountable. And I don't know. I'm just, like, horrified that, like, this is still going on. I read the newspapers. It's still going on. And I know it's going on everywhere in the United States. And everybody needs to be, all the officers need to be. I mean, the surveillance cameras, I think, are a good idea.
Thank you, Danica. You know, let me put this to Jim Hammer. I mean, okay, so Danica's calling in from Oakland. Jeff Adachi's talking. This is not just San Francisco. There does seem to be a theme here. A lot of these cases do seem to involve drugs.
They do, and God, we could do a whole hour on drugs. And having been a prosecutor most of my career, I think we ought to decriminalize largely drugs. Cannabis, I think it should be regulated and taxed. Other drugs should be misdemeanors. So I think that's a good idea. I want to make this point, and I think it's important for people to hear. San Francisco, I think, in some ways is a model, actually, for dealing with bad cops. We have 2,000 police officers. We're talking about 5 or 6 right now. We have the Office of Citizens Complaints. Not every city has that. An independent office headed by Joyce Hicks with their own investigators. Any citizen who has a problem in San Francisco can go to that office. They will do an independent investigation. If they find the case founded, they'll bring it to the police commission. And again, having sat on that commission, I voted and did the commission to fire police officers for misconduct. That wasn't the case, I think, 5, 10 years ago. I think the commission was not as good. But right now in San Francisco, there is vigorous action taken against bad cops in a timely manner.
So then comes this question from Laura. She says, let me get this straight. If an officer lies and causes someone to go to prison, he can be fired, as if being fired is a terrible punishment.
I'm sorry to interrupt. He should be prosecuted.
She's asking that thing.
He should be prosecuted and go to prison. I think a DA or a police officer who commits perjury, who conspires to obstruct justice, should get punished worse than an ordinary civilian.
You know, and one thing I would say, though, is that if we have all these accountability systems in place, why didn't it work here? We had one of the officers who had a long history of misconduct, including an incident where he took a crack pipe from a suspect, broke it, and then cut the suspect with it. And, you know, we've had, I can cite example after example, and I'm sure Jim is aware of some of these cases of officers who no action was taken against, and situations where the Office of Citizens Complaints, and I know the director, I know her and her staff work hard, but they're overwhelmed. And, you know, for them to be able to investigate each of these cases, you know, why wasn't there an investigation done of these officers and what was the result?
I want to thank both of you gentlemen. Jeff Adachi, public defender for the city and county of San Francisco. Jim Hammer, former San Francisco prosecutor and police commissioner and a reserve cop back in the day. Thank you so much for joining us.
Great to be with you.
Coming up in our second half hour, radiation on Treasure Island. How clean was the cleanup? We'd love to hear from you, especially if you live on the island. Call us at 866-733-6786. We'll be back in just a moment. This is Forum on KQED Public Radio. I'm Rachel Miro.